Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our honorable and noble listening audience. You're listening once again to Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, talking to you plainly in English to an English-speaking audience that is primarily Muslim, New African, and New African. We're open to all black people everywhere in the world, primarily from Rio de Janeiro to Halifax, Nova Scotia. We are non-coercive, we're laid back and easy, but at the same time, we're very hard on the issues. I make no apologies, no hesitation, no reservation, foremost, about those of us who were brought over to the Western Hemisphere, many who were Muslims, some weren't Muslims, but many were Muslims, and I'm about the business of healing them. In fact, I have a DDS, a doctorate degree, as a doctorate of denigrification sciences, and I've been known to perform nigosectomies even on myself. But that being said, I want to welcome a distinguished brother, a published author that I've been looking to figure out how we get more of him, and then a friend of mine, one of our intellectuals out of Baltimore, Maryland, one of my former students, Imam Earl Amin, that brought the book to my attention. And naturally, if someone is writing in the area of African, Muslim, African-American, I'm going to get the book. And I got the book. And lo and behold, I realized I knew the brother, not knew him, but no, like that. But know from whence he come, the Muslim Empowerment Institute. Welcome, Brother Hamid, to Religion Means Alive.
As-salamu alaykum, Imam. Thank you for allowing me to come on your show.
And I'm honored you could give us an opening statement.
Yes, sir. My name is Brother Hamid. I'm a speaker for the Muslim Empowerment Institute. And I'm just a YouTuber. I'm just a person that engages in da'wah, which is inviting people in my area to Islam. And I teach classes on introductory Islamic topics, and I'm an author, and I'm just glad to be here.
And are you a father, your family?
Yes, sir. I'm a father. I have three children. I've been married to my beautiful wife for 9 years.
And are you originally from Memphis, Tennessee?
Yes, sir. I'm born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. Yes, sir.
As it's said in Tennessee, they say, Ken Oxy. So we're absolutely honored to know that you are with us. And, you know, what is the thesis of the book? Don't tell me I left the book. But I like the picture. When you say from the back, I know I didn't lose it. No, sir. I got it marked up, got it right here. What is your basic thesis of from the back of the bus to the back of the camel?
Well, basically, the main idea is I'm exploring the shift in consciousness that occurred when Black American Muslims started to become acculturated to mainstream Islam, Orthodox Islam. And I'm talking about how there were some psychological implications of the traumas of slavery and Jim Crow and racism and white supremacy that infected many Black Americans, and it caused them to gravitate towards white supremacy affirming interpretations of religion. And when they came into al-Islam, that caused them to gravitate towards immigrant or Arab supremacy affirming interpretation of religion. And it caused a sense of religious dysfunction within our Black American Muslim communities.
Now, my brother, I've always been heard from certain learned people that once you come into Islam, all your problems are automatically solved. You disagree with that proposition?
Oh, yes, sir. I emphatically disagree with that proposition. Yes, sir. I think that for a lot of these black
what
American
Muslims... Why don't you get me a kufi, put on a robe or a fold, and I've gone to Hajj?
Yes,
isn't it possible that I have transcended being Fannie Lou Hamer's grandson of Willie Jones? Does that now make me Ibn Bubba? I mean, I become Sheikh Ibn Bubba. I thought I know the Al-Fatiha, I mean, know 2 hours of surahs. Doesn't cure my problem?
No, sir. Just changing your name and putting on a costume doesn't change the psychological implications of racism and white supremacy. And with the interpretation of Islam that's been championed by many of these black American Muslims who learned Islam from their, what I call them, their overseas masters, this actually increased the post-traumatic slavery disorder that... with them basically switching out a slave master that's white to a slave master that's an Arab or a Pakistani or even an African.
So you're saying these people are changing seats on the Titanic?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's just the same script but a different cast. So,
I got you.
Yes, sir. So what we've noticed
you
is that...
You are one of the few people who are willing to say that. And I feel good that I'm now not preaching to the choir, the proverbial choir. I'm preaching to the pulpit. And I happen to agree with you.
This is
my message. I believe if we started to address this situation, we wouldn't have a masjid in the United States could fill up our people. I think our people want, I know they want Islam. I travel all over the country. I'm on my way to Atlanta. I just was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, with a group of bishops at the funeral of Carlton Pearson. And I went up to the casket to make dua for the people, not for the departed, but for the people. And these bishops almost mobbed me, not with hostility. With so much love, people, I know they want to be. But when they see Alibaba and the 40 Thieves uniforms on, and even some brothers I've met that, what is this phenomenon? You've got to help me with it. Brothers who actually even speak English with a Pakistani accent. What's up with that?
Yes, sir. So what it is, well, it's all about the shift in consciousness that occurred. Now, why did this shift in consciousness actually occur? So if we go back to the plantation, the only appropriate implementation of Christianity, understanding of Christianity, was according to the slave master, right?
Right.
The slaves weren't allowed to delve into the Bible and to have an understanding that would liberate them. Because if they did, guess what? They wouldn't be slaves anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So with that stain that is within our, deeply in our subconscious mind, you know, when we took on mainstream Islam, and it did, of course, come with some benefits. You know, we were learning Arabic, learning Islamic sciences, but there are some side effects to every medicine that you take. So
that's right.
You know, this, yes, sir. So, you know, this medicine, it alleviated our theological ills, in a sense. The side effects was us basically feeling that it's an imperative in order for me to be an authentic Muslim. I have to become another person, right?
So this is a psychosis a religious psychosis, which means the person has lost consciousness. And in some cases, I've seen brothers actually become psychotic. I mean, literally
yes,
had to be taken to the hospital. Because I
yes.
would argue that most African Americans are basically borderline personalities anyway. And when they are
yes.
pushed over the edge, compounded by no job, not no job, but, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself. But you talk about the work, and I'm saying we because I'm agreeing with you. I don't want to come in and make this a congratulatory show. But a brother that was productive, was working a job, maybe pre-Islam, dad doesn't work, was in the Nation of Islam, he's clean, he's fresh, he's fast-moving, quick-thinking right down to the modern times. Now he seems that he has taken a big dose of some drug to put him to sleep. He wants to be in the masjid. He may memorize. You know, if he's studious, he would probably be reading much Quran, maybe a hafiz at times, but doesn't have a job. What's up with that?
Yes, sir. You know, this was something that I wanted to go into more details with when I read a book by Dr. Sherman Jackson called Islam and the Black American Looking Toward the Third Resurrection. There's a part of his book where he says, I just want to mention this quote of his and we'll talk about it. He says in his book that the most lamentable development was the seemingly reverse effect that Islam was exerting on the pathologies and dysfunctionalities of the urban ghetto. Beyond the explicitly religious vices, for example, illicit sex or alcohol consumption, Islam was fast losing its significance as a fortifier of indigenous constructions of such values as manly pride, fiscal responsibility, or civic consciousness. Whereas under the Islam of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, education, work, and community uplift were synonymous with Black Muslim, Sunni Islam was increasingly being invoked as a reason not to work for the infidel, not to be educated in the infidel's institutions, and not to be involved in the infidel community. At least as far as the old guard was concerned, one could now almost assume that the stricter a Black American Sunni Muslim adhered to Islam, the less educated, the less gainfully employed, and the less civic-minded he or she would likely be. In short, under the new immigrant influence understanding of Islam, Sunnism was in many ways becoming a cause rather than a solution to the problem of Black American dysfunctionality in America. Now, this particular quote by Dr. Jackson, when I read this quote, it was like the heavens were open out for me. You know, it was like I heard thunder and lightning. And so the whole of my book is talking about this. Now, this idea where we know this from the past where you had many Black folks, they were so heavenly bound but no earthly good. They forgot about their here and was only focused on the hereafter. So this consciousness only transferred to a different theology. So you have brothers mm-hmm. and sisters like a brother that I know. He was a Black brother growing up in the South. Whose mother, his father, and his siblings were all physicians in the South in the 70s mm-hmm. in the 60s and 70s. Now, what was his occupation? He chose to be a cab driver, right? Now, why did he mm-hmm. do this? Because he was so heavenly bound and he was just no earthly good. Thought that in order for him to be a good Muslim, he needs to keep his head on the sky and just ignore everything that's happening around him. That means taking care of his wife and children. That means going to work every day. That means advocating for his people and his community and even giving them Islam. He chose to spend all of his time studying that he can't even impart the knowledge that he learned to anyone. So
because he actually feels inferior in the knowledge. He would have a continuous battle with inferiority, and generally the inferiority rules out.
Right.
And so he,
yes, sir.
Well, I get to study some more. I get to go here to study. I know that phenomenon. Instead, and let me ask you this about our leaders, Muslim leaders. How many Muslim leaders, imams and sheikhs, are telling people to go to medical school, become nurses, to get an education so they can support their family? You heard them talking about that in most of the massages?
Well, most of the guys who are inflicted with what I call Toby Muhammad syndrome, they don't want their kids to even go to school. You know, they would prefer for them to be homeschooled, which is okay in some instances, but they just want them to study religious knowledge, you know, study all the sciences, and just, you know, in many cases, just beg immigrants to fund their religious projects and to just live off immigrant money.
So basically,
that's been my experience.
They have gone into a nomadic, monistic, kind of a monastic type of existence. Only thing they do
yes,
is have
sir.
Women. Can you talk to us a little bit about what effects, if any, that has family where they have three doctors, and this son comes up to be a witch doctor? What do you think this professional family, father and brother, think of that of it? By a victimized person.
Yes, sir. Yeah, well, you know, usually in these situations, these brothers and sisters who may have had, you know, came from decent families, you know, their parents, you know, hardworking people, when they have a relative that deems that religion should just, you know, make them not want to work, make them not want to take care of his family. I mean, they don't have a good relationship. You know, they see that this person is representing Islam, and they may see Islam that, you know, that Islam is some type of monastic type of ideology, that it projects you into outer space. And so that's the type of effect that it would have on some of these brothers and sisters.
Let me ask you this. I know all these guys very well, Professor Jackson, I know. All the so-called learned class, what actually are they saying to be quick? I know Professor Quick is a very fine historian of West Africa, of Islam in West Africa, studied with John Hunwick, I mean, at the University of Toronto. I find them lacking. I know they are your associates, friends. I find them lacking in solutions.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think that they're well-versed in some of these things, these social issues within the Black American Muslim community from a theoretical basis. But as far as implementing things, I haven't seen a whole lot of action in that regard. So I noticed that. You know, that was very apparent to me. So I wanted to take the theory that they imparted in some of their books and take it and put it into action and try to advocate for returning Islam to the transformative effect that it once had.
Yeah, and that's what I've always wondered. I mean, you know, I've studied Islam formally, you know, studied the hadith, but you know, the point is, I'm trying to get Ray Ray, first of all, put that gun down and pick up a book.
Right.
I mean, I have a brother right now, I'm counseling. I mean, it's not all, the Dawah is calling them back to their nature. That's what Dawah, giving them a lot of rhetoric. And I said, first of all, this guy's the son of a doctor. He's been shot people, and so you have an opportunity to go and become a registered nurse, which is a beginning, not so much to please your father, but to please yourself. You have four babies. How are you going to support them? And I think
right.
We need to advocate to these men to take a good look at themselves that Islam requires you to support. The, this is all Islam. It amazes me, brother. I'm looking for a doctorate on you because I think you have a doctorate of reform. That a man that was in the Nation of Islam, and now he slips back into this God consciousness. Really a bad reflection. I often say that if you weren't to, one were to look back and say, here's a guy that was an FOI standing, working 30 hours a week for the community, and then, you know, got a job. And suddenly, this man becomes a Frankenstein monster. That is, a bionic personality. His brain is in Mecca. His face is in Mecca, and his brain is in El-Zab. But basically, as you put it in the book, he's studying some inferior sheikh overseas who have been reading some book over and over again. I was picking a course from a guy who was an extension of Al-Azhar Arabic language. And so this man had me going over and over again with the haruf of the alphabet. So I told him, I said, look, he said, can you recite Al-Fatiha? So I tried to recite Al-Fatiha. He said, that was very good. I said, look, this is the end of you and I. I'm looking for grammar. I know how to read, and I'm looking to build vocabulary. So he was polite, but there's so many people that think that we are this damn fool. How do we get our people back to focusing on serious matters?
Well, it's going to be very difficult. I think that we did have a long period for about, I would say maybe 5 to 10 years, where it seemed that people were trying to slowly navigate out of this Toby Muhammad syndrome that I call it. I think when we saw that the collapse of the so-called Salafi movement within the black community, and people, you know, came out of that particular understanding and say, you know, they were too strict and rigid, and some of those people were able to come back and just say, hey, I'm going to be a Muslim and advocate for my people and just be a Muslim. I'm not going to try to take on anyone else's culture. I'm going to just do my 5 a day, fast on Ramadan, and just be a good person. Some of those people were able to come out of that. But a lot of those brothers and sisters now, I'm seeing that they're starting to gain some steam and increasing this Toby Muhammad syndrome in many of our urban communities, especially in the Northeast. I listened to a live debate, if you will, on YouTube with some brothers who were just, you know, arguing back and forth about, you know, theology. And one brother was saying that, you know, if you don't say such and such the way it is, then you just not even a guided Muslim. And the other brother said, well, it's a difference of opinion. You know, it's not clear. And it's something that's not clear. Well, if Allah didn't clarify, then why should we be arguing over it? They just went back and forth for 3 hours. And so
imagine the brother that's sitting there listening to them who doesn't have a job, is not stable.
Mm-hmm.
What effect, if any, does it have on him?
I think it just increases their dysfunction. And I think that a lot of these brothers and sisters, I mentioned this in the book, that some people are looking for an escape.
Right.
And their arrival in religion is not necessarily sincere. It's just they're just trying to escape from their problems. But their implementation of religion only increases their dysfunction. It increases their problems.
In other words, you're saying they're using it because, it's in the Pentecost, that the shaitan will come at you from your right and your left. So the right way is coming at you. He comes at you with the religious pretension, that he's really befriending you, when in fact he's really knocking your brain out of reality, which makes you a burden on yourself, a burden on society, and generally ending up on a welfare roll or ending up on the child support line. It seems to
yes,
me,
sir.
I am planning that 24 to make a national tour to waking our people up. It's called Wake Up Tour, and I have, and particularly, I need people to keep up with me. I want to revive and just give our people some very simple ideas called the Urban Peace Ministry, the anti-KKK,
yes,
Ken Killing Ken. You know, I was talking to some brother recently about the Klan. He said, yeah, man, the Klan is back. I said, no, the Klan is not. The Klan never left. It went from the Klan on the road to the Klan in you. When we have approximately 9,000, this is very painful stuff. Some people will get very angry with it. That's stupid. That anger, generally, as we know, psychological, is a cover-up emotion. And I said, you know, I think you you don't want to face what's going on. That's another reason I stopped teaching in prison. When I was a young imam, I was imam of the Baltimore Masjid, and one of my assistants, I now believe it was a plot, every day, I said, brother, take me to a college camp. I want to go and teach every day, two or three times a day. Well,
yes,
sometimes you take me to a college. And I was very successful. I would go on a college campus and discuss whatever they want, but I would lead them right to where I would always say, look, now I'm going to talk about this subject. But what I'm also going to talk about, I want to present who I am. First of all, I'm a, you know. So, you know, you can do that. You can integrate. We got to learn effective techniques for introducing people to Islam. Yes. You want to take some calls?
Sure. Yes, sir.
You can join the conversation at 213-325-3430, and you will be in turn. Just raise your. I think you raise your hand, or and we will bring you on. If you have a comment, we would certainly wish for you to join the conversation. We're speaking with Brother Hameen from the Muslim Empowerment Institute. And the author of a book that's going to be soon, I want to buy a case of them and bring them to Savior's Day, from the back of the bus to the back of the camel, analyzing the psychology of Toby Muhammad. Tell us why you chose that topic.
The title?
Yeah, the title, yes.
Yes, sir. Well, that phrase, from the back of the bus to the back of the camel, I actually don't know who coined that phrase, but it's something that, you know, we've all heard for years. I assume that it could have come from some people in the Afrocentric community. You know, they observed many of us, and I talk about this in the book, how, you know, we went from advocating for black people to advocating for everyone else except black people. And I think phrase could have come from them. And then as far as Toby Muhammad, this is a character that I created. And, of course, it's not a specific person. But, you know, it refers to a composite character. And if we're familiar with the book and the film Roots, Kunta Kinte, of course, was an African. And he was also a Muslim, but when he was brought to America, his slave master beat him into becoming Toby Muhammad, which was a different person, a different character. And when I saw some of these brothers and sisters who were, advocating for their new slave master with a different language and a different wardrobe, I just said, okay, that person, he's a Toby. He's not only a Toby, he's a Toby Muhammad. He's two people in one. He has a split personality. So that's where I came up with that term. And I started doing some memes on social media. And, you know, people, you know, laughed at some of the memes. And brother Imam Luqman Ahmed from Philadelphia, he took it on and he started to refer to some certain individuals within our community with this name, Toby Muhammad. And so I just said, you know, hey, I'm going to do a psychological analysis of this composite character named Toby Muhammad, and I made it into a book.
Well, he exists. Unfortunately, he predominates the imagination of African-American Muslims. In fact, so much so that a big-time cardinal in the Catholic Church, you know, a lot of us can't think, you know, I don't want to hear nothing from him. He said, what happened to you all? And I think that is a very, very good question. And
yes, sir.
I'm hazard to guess, we can talk about it, it's a scheme. I see someone from the 313 area code. If you don't mind, I'm going to ask if you'd like to share some your comments, I think, from 313. I'm going to open the line up. First, we have 916. 916, what would you like to say? Well, if you want to remain silent, you can, but if you can, well, to speak, we're here. This is an open discussion. This is unlike other programs. It's a discussion. We don't shut anybody down. You can come with any of your opinions. This is a very serious discussion. One of the few discussions I think that's relevant about the conditions of African Americans. Some of us have the Toby Muhammad right in our homes. We know Toby in our families and friends. So if you'd like to make a comment, 917-686, would you like to make a comment? I guess not. All right, we have somebody from 313. What have you to say? 313-333.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, I just tuned in. I missed the first part of this. I got the time zones mixed up. But if there's any way I can hear the first part of this, I would like to make comments. I only saw the announcement.
You can make comments. It's not just about the book. What we're talking about is these people that have artificial intelligence, not in the sense of the of engineering, but the social engineering. These are people, our own brothers and sisters, that have had a dose of Islam and have lost their identity, or to put the words of Ralph Ellison, somewhere along the way they lost their identity. So you can listen if you wish. You'd like to make comments. We've been on the air for maybe 15 minutes. The discussion is centering around, I didn't mean to embarrass you, the discussion is centering around identity, African-American, Muslim African-Americans forming identity. But if you want to just continue to listen.
I wrote to the person who announced this call tonight that in 1975, Imam Wahid Muhammad issued a mandate to us. He told us to remake the world. Not only did he make that, not only did he say that, he gave us the blueprint. He gave us the means by which or how to achieve that goal. And so I know that most people may not remember that. That was quite some time ago. But
I remember it vividly. I remember it vividly.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Well, now, as I mentioned to some, we are not Sunni, we are not Shia, we're not part of the what we may refer to as the old Islamic world. We are a new people. And it's like the Chinese were able to broker this peace with the Saudis and the Iranians, who have had some difficulty with each other. As I understand it, the Saudis have executed several Shiite imams, as well as they shot up a whole bunch of Iranians on the Hajj several years ago. But now, the Chinese were able to do that because they're not part of the Islamic world. And so they were able to go to those two parties and make peace with them. And we have a similar situation in that we haven't been part of the Islamic world as it come up with the schisms and the differences in the schools of thought and things like that. And so Imam Muhammad, رضي الله عنه, told us that we're not Shiite, we're not Sunni, we're Muslim. That was Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon the Prophet. That's what he was. He was a Muslim. He didn't have all these other labels and things like that. So all this came about after he made his transition, all these different schools of thought and things like that. Okay, so if we are astute, if we are studious, if we don't reject that leadership, then we have the ability to take our place among the civilized nations of the world and impact it. Because we have the moral, fortitude or background or experiences to impact the world, because no one has ever suffered like we have. No one in the history of mankind have suffered the kind of treatment that we have in this part of the world, the wilderness of North America, as it used to be called. Still maybe accurately called that.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your comments. You have anything else to tell us? Or you like to ask the question of our dear brother, Brother Hamid?
Well,
I appreciate that. I want you all to let the audience know this is Religion Means Alive. I'm Imam Alfred, and my job it is to wake us up. I am still trying to remake the world of the new African, the first wake him up to it. And then to get him to remake himself and remake his family, remake his neighborhood, remake his block. And as you perhaps know, I'm an elected official. I don't work just among Muslims. I work among the people. So I really appreciate you. Would you care to identify yourself?
Well, yes. My name is J.T. Shabazz. I grew up in Detroit. I lived on the West Coast in Oakland when Imam Muhammad went to Oakland back in the 80s. One, I think it was, recorded
right.
All his lectures. Brother Imam Alfred, where are you from?
I am really all over this community, but I'm really in New York currently right now. Originally, I'm from a place called Lynchburg, Virginia. I first accepted the Nation of Islam in 1962 in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Okay.
And kind of made a slight detour, checked out other movements, and then came back in 1969 in Temple Number 23 and Buffalo, New York. And from that point on, I've been active, and I was very close to Imam Waqif Muhammad. I actually worked for him. And I'm still 100% unapologetic, without hesitation, supporter of his ministry and
yes,
the national spokesman for Imam Waqif Muhammad II. So I am... Even at my age, I am still more fired up and jacked up to help build the African, this new African, first and foremost. Because once his sanity is built up, he can make a choice as to whether he wants Islam or not. Because I'm going to tell you the truth. If you're insane according to Islamic law, you can't make a choice. And most of our people suffer from severe mental illness, the blind, the deaf, and the dumb. Once they can wake up to their consciousness and their social responsibility, then they will be in a position to to remake the world. But I thank you so much for joining us. Hope you'll tell all your friends in Detroit and 8 Mile, 6 Mile, Livonia, throughout Temple number 1 and the descendants of that temple, to tell them that Imam Alfred is back on the air, religion means alive, and he wants to reach out to our people. And I'm happy to have our honored guest, Brother Hamid. I've conferred upon him the doctorate. I got my DDS from UCLA, the University of Corner Lenox Avenue, and my DDS is not in the science of dentistry. It's the denigrification of our people. So 40 million of our people walk around with niggeritis, and they need surgery to remove it. And that includes those who said the Assalamu Alaikum, because most of the Assalamu Alaikum are Assalamu Fakum, by intent or by default.
Is this every week? Is this program on every week?
Well, we're on every day.
Every day?
Yes, we're independent. We don't have anything to do with American Muslim 360. This is the Imam Alfred program. Your support and donations, you can send your donations to Imam Alfred, Cash App, $ Imam Alfred, Cash App, or you can write me, Imam Alfred, A. Muhammad Ministries, make your checks payable to A. Muhammad Ministries, Post Office Box 1843, Linden, New Jersey, 07036. But we're just starting back up again. We've been away. We've treated down in Mexico for prostate cancer. Allah has given me real comfort after stage 4 cancer. I'm basically, the cancer's dying, and I'm killing it with the help of Allah, and I'm ready to travel this 2,000 by 3,000 mile wilderness mm-hmm. and wake our people up. So I hope you'll be joining me and supporting me. I want to come every place besides messages. I don't want to come to any messages, because most of the messages all over the country have betrayed Imam Waqidi Muhammad and allowed Toby to take over our messages.
You know, I'm not in a situation to write. You have my phone number, that 313-333. If you could text me the information that you just announced, could you do that for me, please? And I would appreciate it. I would respond.
Yes, sir. I will write you. Yes, sir. Thank you. We're looking for people who want to host various shows that want to help me in this work. I will text you.
Okay.
And
I appreciate
I'll what you do. And if you'd like to be the guest on the show tomorrow, you can.
Okay. We'll see. Well, tomorrow is Juma. Tomorrow is Friday.
Well, no, this is 7:30. This is not a Juma day. It's not held at Juma time. It's held at 7:30.
Okay. The show starts at
7:30.
Yes, sir. Okay.
And we are on 7:30, but we look for people who want to come on the show, talk in plain language. We don't want anybody with Assalamu alaikum, Rahmatullah, Barakatul, Cape Lahab, Ta'eeb, a long string of drunken Arabic phrases because they think they're superior. I don't want to leave my guests out. Brother Hamid, jump in at any point. This is your show, your program. Any comments you want to make?
Yes, sir. I wanted to just talk a little bit about some of the details of what Toby Muhammad syndrome is. And I have a part in my book, if I can just read it. It's just only two paragraphs.
Please do that.
Yes, sir. So Toby Muhammad syndrome refers to an abnormal mental state of mind involving a loss of contact with reality, partially due to practicing foreign expressions of Islam, coupled with post-traumatic slavery disorder inherited from enslaved ancestors. People afflicted with this syndrome are described as psychotic, and they may exhibit sudden personality and behavioral changes. Depending on the severity, This may be accompanied by unusual or bizarre behaviors such as reduced social and civic engagement, impaired judgment, confused thinking, disorganized thought and speech. Individuals may acquire a foreign accent despite having never traveled to the accent's place of origin, as well as difficulty carrying out day-to-day activities. Sufferers may also exhibit the inability of maintaining employment or may exhibit a general antagonism towards employment altogether, as well as disdain for secular education. Individuals may spend an exorbitant amount of time involved in intense religious studies, which could catalyze antisocial and obsessive compulsive behaviors. They also experience low self-esteem, multiple personalities, and/or identity disorders. They may be opposed to wearing 21st century Western attire in favor of foreign dress. Sufferers may be prone to serial marriages and divorces, along with domestic violence. Lastly, in severe cases, individuals may seem apparently religious, but are inwardly malicious, manifesting itself into deceptive behaviors and inclined toward criminal activities such as theft, murder, alcohol, drug abuse, and sexual deviancy. Despite their apparently abnormal state of being, sufferers may be totally oblivious to their condition.
Brandy, and you know what? I'm so glad that you put this in, that this is really a mental disorder. This is not somebody, this is not to be taken lightly. Our social,
yes,
science, I don't think most of our scholars are able to deal with it. I told a brother, I decided to go back to school and get a degree in clinical psychology. I'm actually in school studying right now, not clinical, I'm in psychoanalysis, because I have worked at a place called Islamic Family Service. I have seen these patients. I was cited a case of a brother who was near Hafiz of Quran. I think he was at 29/30th juice. And I did a psychoanalysis with this brother for about 9 months, and he came to the session to beat me up and tell me how bad I was and how dumb I was. So I know what his issues was. I listened to him for about 9 months. And finally I asked him, I said, can I ask you a question? Not about the 10th when I asked him a question. Can I ask you, is it true that you shoot dope? He said, well, I'll stop a lot than he would have with some Arabic, which I at the time didn't understand. And it took me another 3 to 4 months before I was able to bring him to a discussion of his dope habit. He was addicted to heroin. And finally, he was able to go in and get treatment. Yes, we're dealing with severely mentally ill, borderline personalities that really, I mean, need professional help. I don't think we have imams who are equipped to deal with it.
Yes, sir.
That's
yes, sir.
A huge one.
Yes,
what
sir.
What is your background, brother? I mean, what is your educational background?
I have a bachelor's in English. I started off majoring in chemistry, but I changed over to English because I was just very interested in the literature. So my bachelor's is in English.
I don't know, you should definitely further study the field of psychology. Clinical psychology, because we are needed immediately. I don't think a man should be an imam unless he can deal with those problems, because, you know, most of our problems is not religious, like a religious problem. It's psychological problems. I mean, it's true in the church. It's true, African Americans, I don't care whether you got a pork chop in their mouth or a bean pie in his hand, got a hookah. We are basically, as a result of slavery, have been driven clinically insane.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the thing is...
Will you share with us a little bit about what we call the system? What is her... What name. What is Toby's wife's name?
I call her Tobia. Tobia Muhammad.
Tell us a little
I have
bit
actually,
about Tobia. And
yes,
I want
sir.
To know,
so,
I want you to talk for a few minutes about Tobia, and then I want you to talk about Ibn Toby. But let's
yes,
first
sir.
Talk about Tobia.
Yes, sir. So basically, Tobia Muhammad is just the female counterpart to Toby Muhammad. He's Toby Muhammad's. She's Toby Muhammad's twin sister. So she shows the same types of behaviors. You know, she is hyper focused on learning theoretical Islam. You know, with other sisters, she's always the first one to just point out. You know, that sister, you know, she has a strand of hair coming out of her hijab, or, she's the lady that's always causing fitna, in the community. You know, she's just, hyper-religious, hyper-focused on Islam and Islamic studies and learning the Quran. But another side of her is that when she's with her husband, she may spend so much time studying and learning and learning hadith and so on and so forth. You know, she's not taking care of her home. She's not cooking. She's not cleaning. And, if her husband, has some problems with her spending so much time, studying, she may just cuss him out. And I have a part of that in my book. You know, she may just...
Yes.
just cuss him out and just talk really crazy to him, and he's thinking like, wait a minute, all this religion that you're talking about, how can you cuss me out? And you're not cooking, you're not cleaning, because in her mind, to listen to a man is equivalent to worshiping other than Allah. So some of these women, they have the background of hatred for men, maybe some feminism type of influence, and they try to bring that over to Islam. So, they may, have a sit down with a brother for marriage, and he's looking at her like, wow, this is a wonderful sister. She's talking all this good deen, but, when he takes her home.
Probably several hadiths in Arabic with good pronunciation.
Yes, sir.
But what about her home hygiene? What's the story with that?
Oh, she's not very clean. She doesn't take care of those matters as far as keeping her home clean and making sure the kids are fed. If she's a stay-at-home wife, when the husband comes home from work, he may be expecting, a clean home or a hot plate, but she's been at the masjid all day or studying all day, and the house is in disarray, and he better not ever tell her nothing about it, because she's going to cuss him out with the Quran in her hand.
I've actually seen those. Yes, I've seen some of them's hijab fall off their head, and they go up in a custody career right in my office as imam, and they just go insane. Before we go to polygyny, let's go to Ibn Toby.
Yes, sir. Well, what I've noticed with some of these brothers and sisters, I've seen that, you may look at them, the husband and wife, the Toby Muhammad couple, they may seem like the model Islamic family to some observers, but when you get down to it, you look at the children may not have a whole lot of interest in Islam, or if they do have an interest in Islam, they've been quarantined from the world. They may not be very educated. Their kids know all the Quran, but don't know anything secular. And they're just totally dysfunctional in a secular sense. They're not into working or anything. And for those
are they trying to get a job, the world of work, or going to college, or getting a trade?
Oh, they're totally averse to that. You know, and, you know, they don't want to learn at the CAFRA's institution. You know, that's
okay.
what he would say. Yes, sir, that's how they would say it. But I noticed that a lot of these brothers and sisters, for their children, you know, they're shuffling them around, you know, living like nomads from here to there and everywhere. And, you know, once their kids get around some people that may not be Muslim, you know, they start to develop a disdain for Islam based upon the dysfunctionality of the household that they grew up in. And they started to appropriate Islam with dysfunction.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we really need to address that. I have met young people who are having aversion to Islam. And one of the things in this national tour we're hoping to make, we're going to be asking for people to give us support as we tour. I want to go on a listening tour to her and young people who have been turned off Islam and heard our story. Because I believe that that's the way that we're going to reach them. They're in terrible shape. And let's add it to it. Mama might have had three husbands.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's
a daddy
big problem.
Pardon me?
Yes, sir. That's a huge problem in our community. Yes, sir.
Do you hear any imams besides yourself addressing this issue? And myself.
I hear Imam Abdul Malik out of New York.
Yes, yes. Yes.
He talks about this. But he's really the main one. Oh, and also Imam Amin Nathari. Yeah, he's actually the founder of the Muslim Empowerment Institute. And he's the one responsible for helping me get my book out and get these ideas out to the people. So I just want to give a shout-out to Imam Amin Nathari.
Please give him my salams. I've known him for years, yes. And maybe we can all confer together and see how we can work together.
Yes, sir.
Because
I'm
troubled by some of the same things he has been. I've known him over the years, and I think he's a very important person here on the East Coast. And coming around the country, just came back from a national tour. Perhaps we can have him on the program. You can put me in touch with him or call him and tell him to call me. I would love to have a conversation with him.
Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
Are there any sisters who are concerned about these issues that we could bring on?
Any sisters with us?
Yes, Muslim sisters.
I don't have any sisters that are really well-versed in what we're talking about, unfortunately. Yes, sir.
What about, let's turn our attention to, before we turn to some solutions, let's turn our attention to polygyny.
Yes,
and
sir.
Its effect on Islamic family life and some of the assumptions about almost being disbarred to have more than one wife.
Yes, sir. Well, the problem is for Toby Muhammad, with a person that has the background that he has, as a person maybe before Islam, he was a whoremonger, you know, he had a girlfriend here, there, and everywhere. It's only natural that when he becomes a Muslim, he's going to continue this type of behavior, but under his new religion. So instead of him saying, okay, I'm going to have more than one wife, I'm going to take care of them, I'm going to take care of the children I have with them, you know, he doesn't see this as a responsibility for him to take care of his family. He rather the government take care of them. So you see that many of these individuals, they may have multiple wives and they're, you know, in dire poverty, you know, depending on government assistance, frequent zakat, recipients of the matchit. Now, this is a married woman here, quote-unquote married. And I call it with the serial marriage that Toby Muhammad is prone to, I call it halal fornication. Because the relationship is similar and the effects of it are similar to just an illicit relationship, but it just has an Islamic stamp of approval on it. And I think this, yes, sir.
Is to Bint Taiba, is she the same in the female Toby, she's guilty of the same thing?
Yes, sir. I've heard of a Muslim sister who had two husbands at the same time.
Did she have any Jalil on that? What was her justification?
Whatever justification she had, it came from the Shaitan's book. But yes, sir. So I've heard of those.
I would love to hear the rationalization. Because believe you me, I do more therapy than anything else. I run across some strangers. I yet to find rationalization, but I've heard some of them say, my naps call for it.
Here's the thing. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Wow. Go ahead. Besides the three imams and yourself, the other imams, they are oblivious to this. Or are they?
Right. They're, I think that they're aware of what's going on, but they just won't do anything about it. There's a particular masjid where, they have extremely high divorce rate. And this is a masjid within the community of Imam Muhammad. Mm-hmm. And, instead of those brothers saying, sister, you were just married last year, why don't you, focus on getting yourself together, they just go ahead and let it happen. They'll marry her, another brother, which they know that relationship is not going to last very long.
And
they'll
also suspect.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I suspect that that imam and the community imam, W.D. Muhammad, is more concerned that they attend the message and pay zakat than he is about the quality of their lives. Wouldn't you think that's the case?
Yes, sir. I was going to mention that, is that they know that the sisters that donate to the masjid is keeping it afloat. They know it's not the brothers. So in these scenarios, they refuse to say anything about the madness that's going on. I mean, you may have a sister, been married a bunch of times, and, instead of, they still trying to get another husband. And
she got a good job, though.
But she has a good
job,
and she donates to the masjid.
That's right.
Right. She donates to the masjid.
I've seen that scenario.
Right.
And truth be told, that goes for the brother, too. The brother, per chance, he is a brother. I think I probably know the masjid there. There are people doing all kinds of things in these societies. And they, as long as they donate. Now, if they don't donate, they might be called on the carpet.
Right.
But if they donate,
yes,
there's
sir.
Nothing going to be said.
Right,
well,
nothing going
to
be said.
Let that brother's growing in faith. Make dua for him.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So this is
let
a big problem.
Are you heard any of the imams, even the imam or the Muhammad community, calling for people to get education so they can earn a living?
You mean outside of the community of Imam Muhammad?
Well, inside the Imam Muhammad community. I most of the masajids come acting the same way.
Yes, sir.
I don't see any differentiation between the two. I mean, they have followed what we call, quote, the black Sunni bag. I mean, you know, maybe with less Arabic, but they seem to pay only lip service to Imam Muhammad. I mean, I don't heard them understanding of trying to implement his philosophy. It's just word lip service. They're more comfortable with the people from the community because they've been around with them. But in terms of bringing about change and trying to open up schools and improve people's social life and be an example to advocate for African America, I don't find that to be the case with most of the people in the Imam Muhammad's community. That's why I am kind of stand out from it, but I'm very associated with his son, Imam Waqif Muhammad II. But the rest of these imams, but I don't have any association with them because I think many of them would rather see a snake come in with gold teeth in the mess than to see me, because I don't go for that kind of nonsense.
Yes, sir.
Didn't come lead the Baptist Church, lead the civil rights movement as a pastor to come in and condone niggerisms and pathology. I'm from the school of Dr. Mays and those people who are about reforming our people.
Yes, sir. It is that's true that you know, people who are part of the community of Imam Muhammad are not immune from Toby Muhammad syndrome. The brothers.
No, they're not. It has gotten worse since he passed. But it, to be proof of the matter, it was started while he was living. It was already started. Yeah. You know,
yes,
I mean, the first step is one of the big imams in this community. I won't name him. He just, his children just got sentenced to life imprisonment. So I won't put, shed any more light on him. But I mean, a scholar wrote about his message. He said, "I thought I was in a foreign country when I went there." And the book called Journey to America. Yeah, you know, it's basically dirty people sitting around on the floor, begging immigrants for money. Basically, just most of the immigrants. Most of the messages on the Imam Muhammad's community really now is supported by immigrant Muslims. The African American Muslims, many of them don't work. They're old senior citizens. And it's really a shell of a community. It's almost a curse.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I have seen that. Yes, sir, it's true. What you're saying is true.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you yourself thought about opening a center where you can address these problems? I don't think anything's going to happen in these messages. I think there has to be a reform center, a center that people are invited to, where they can get out of Islam, but at the same time, they would have to check their niggerism at the door. Or process that niggerism. We know they won't get it out of the right way, but I mean, it seems to me that call them away from the wall of destruction.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, my whole goal of writing the book was for people to really take on these ideas that I'm imparting in it and really say, hey, you know what? Brother Hamid is telling it like it is. We need to really work to solve these problems within our communities. Now, the book has a lot of, because Toby Muhammad is basically a lot of satire. And I mean, there is a lot of humorous aspects of the book. But I want people to really, and the reason I have it like that is because I want people to be entertained while they're reading the book. Because it's talking about something that's really serious.
You are really doing it to keep us from really going crazy or crying, because it really
is
a very, very sad situation. I don't see how we could be an African-American Muslim can go to bed at night and know that he is experiencing, he or she is experiencing this kind of position. And what is happening to us is how bad this influences the rest of our people who haven't yet accepted Islam. I find that most of the people that are interested in that song, as soon as they see Toby and Sister Toby, they are just turned off. And they ask the question,
yes,
if they did some experience with the Nation of Islam, what happened to y'all?
Yes, sir. Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm in the South, and if a black person here, and a non-Muslim black person, if they hear about the word Islam, the first thing that comes to their mind is Nation of Islam.
Right.
Because they don't know anything of what happened when Malcolm X left the nation. They just disappeared. You know, they don't know what happened to Muhammad Ali after 1975. I mean, the Muhammad Ali that we're that's been popularized is Muhammad Ali prior to 1975 when he was in the Nation of Islam. You know,
right.
we don't know that he used to give out, you know, pamphlets about Islam. That he would, you know, one of the things, he followed a little bit too long to support the masjids and the schools.
Right.
You know, and, you know, but we don't know what happened to these people after they left the Nation of Islam. We don't hear about it.
Well, you know? Really, you don't hear anything about Imam Waqif Muhammad. Nobody really writes about him. And I hate to say it, the imperialism of the immigrants was terrible. That's another thing you have to talk about. I mean, these are the guys running the stores. They're not really interested. I was in Mexico for medical treatment. And basically, and by the way, by the grace of Allah, the cancer really was cured in Mexico at Immunity Therapy Center. But I called the messenger there while during Ramadan, and I wanted to go over for a tolerate slot. And just to visit the masjid, they didn't welcome me at all. And it's not the Latinos, it was the Arabs who have moved into Mexico, and they go into these countries just to get the women. They're not interested in teaching Islam to our people, or the same thing as the Dominican Republic.
Right. Right.
So
the
African American has a big job, and I think we're going to sleep on the job.
Yes, sir. And one of the things that I've started doing is, you know, for years, you know, most of the immigrants in this country were uninterested in calling people to Islam. Their concept
right.
of giving dawah was really chasing whiteness, you know, doing,
right.
you know, cultural inclusion activities and different things like this. Now, I've noticed a trend within the last few years that many of these our immigrant brothers and sisters are getting very interested in giving dawah now. It's because they made it very trendy on social media. You'll see
right.
tons of videos, and they have millions of views of, you know, a brother who his origin is from the Muslim world. You know, he's giving people shahada here and there. And the problem that we have now is that, you know, people that look just like you and me, they see as religious authorities, not you and me, they seeing this guy from another country.
No,
yes, sir, go ahead.
That's a deliberate plan. I have set in on that. In fact, I had a Caucasian Muslim to tell me. He said,
yes.
I'm going to tell you, brother Imam, this is almost 40 years ago. He said a certain ethnic group told them that the African-American give Islam a bad name. We want you to join. They don't like that we're in Islam. So it's part of it, I'm not bragging, part of it is happening because of the fact I have put a lot of pressure on them. I'm always in various international interfaith groups. And I am not allying with them. And I know what that game is. That game is dominance. They want to do the same thing that they're doing all over the world to engage in imperialism. And so now they're stepping up that game. I think I know the brothers that they got going around. There's an effort by one of those organizations. And they're only picking off our best people. They're not going and getting the brother who needs some social services, some help. They're giving African-American physicians and professionals They will even give him to their daughter so they can have him as their slave.
Yes, sir. And that's what's happening. Now, what's happening here locally where I am is that the masjid, like I said, you know, they weren't really interested in any type of community outreach. They gave the task to this is a mega masjid in my city, to a brother who is a very sincere brother, but he really doesn't know anything about Islam. So he's going all over the city. He's teaching in the prisons. Doesn't know a whole lot about Islam. His English is really not all that good. He's teaching in the prisons. He's, you know, has these, he's actually given dawah in the zoo. Had a dawah table in the zoo. And so he's going out here doing this. But this
is he African American?
Oh, no, no, sir. No, sir.
Oh, God.
He's an immigrant. He's an immigrant. And see, what's happening is that the people are taking shahada left and right here, but after they take shahada, it's like, all right, you can get away from me. You know, they're not.
Are they assisting these people, as the Quran say? Do they assist them in getting any education? You know, zakat is for those types of people. These people recently reunited with faith, reunification with faith. They don't help them beyond that.
They want them to take shahada, and that's it. You know, you're on your own. Now,
no
one of the masjids, they allow me. Yes, sir?
No social service work, nothing. They're on their own.
They want them to join a social media app, and on that social media app, all they talk about is Palestine. So you got a person that just took their shahada. They think being a Muslim is just, you know, talking about Palestine. Don't know how to make salat. Don't know how to do anything. And they're not concerned at all.
Well, we are in a real pickle. We must ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us. Frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, Brother Amin. We are honestly under a curse. I think for the good leaders that have been sent to us now, we play. Well, I'm going to try to do something about that. I planned a national tour, with my focus being the urban peace minister. I'll talk to you off the phone about a approach that we want to have. But we do want to make a 10-city tour. But my address is to the African American. I know coming to him to talk about how to improve his life, and you a Muslim, is a better way of coming to him direct. Because if you speak to his personality and recovery from the effects of slavery, I have a strategy. That strategy is to go around and support our people and to call them to Islam, but also to first call them to sanity. Put a gun down. What should African-American be doing in 2024? These are the imperatives that we want to travel with. But Brother Hamid, I have indeed enjoyed you, and I hope you will come back again. In fact, I hope you will even host one of the shows. This is your airwaves. You're welcome to come on. Religion means alive. We're going to be coming on every day. We want you to know this is an open forum. Anybody want to host the show, as long as they're not coming in alienating people, they must follow my methodology. Then we good. But it's an open forum, and I make no apologies. This forum is about waking up the African-American community and exposing them to Islam. That's ideal. Other people, we will make dua for. We will go to help our brother who speaks Spanish, because he's still our brother, whether he knows it or not. He's still a part of the whole diaspora. But our priority is the Bubba, Keisha Green, the Ray Ray, and even to Dr. Raymond, that got a doctorate degree in these. He's a Dr. Tyrone, and Dr. Tyrone is free to use my phone, as long as he calls and talk about something like that. In fact, we even are prepared to go into a church and have comparative religion. We're looking for any way, shape, or form to reach our people in a clean and allowed manner. Looking forward to working with you, Brother Abdi. Will you give your information out and tell them where they can get your book from?
Yes, sir. Anyone can follow me on YouTube. I have a channel called Muslim Empowerment Institute. I have a number of videos. We're going to have some more that we're going to do, some new Muslim classes that we're doing. And you can purchase my book at MuslimEmpowermentInstitute.wordpress.com. Again, that's MuslimEmpowermentInstitute.wordpress.com. I have a short synopsis of the book. And just purchase the book. Follow us on YouTube, Muslim Empowerment Institute, Brother Hamid.
Well, I sure enjoyed you. I've seen you talk of various topics. You almost alluded to the Kevin Samuels, so I was just turned on. You're a very good presenter, and I think you have a powerful presence. I know that you are always a great worker in the cause. I'm going to ask Detroit if they want to say something before we go. Did you want to say something before we close out?
Just that I'll be in touch with you, and I want to get a copy of the brother's book and read it. First time hearing about it, but I'm very interested in reading his book. And inshallah, tune into future programs and learn more about what's going on, what you're doing.
All right. We will be in touch with you. Thank you so much. May Allah continue to bless. Please give the greetings to those in the 313 area code. You have listened to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm Imam Alfred. We're never discouraged. We can hold up to 200 callers at one time. Or you can see, go to Block Talk Radio and /, Imam Alfred, and I will come up. Or you can just see me straight up by dialing 515-602-9651, and you can send your donations to Imam Alfred, Imam Alfred Muhammad Ministries, or you can send your donations on Cash App. Thank you. Peace be on you and the mercy of God. Amen. Thank you, dear Brother Hamid. We'll be in touch.
Yes, sir. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.